IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, this is episode 30 of the Killing It Podcast. Now, see, you're actually getting pretty good at this.
Well, you think after 30 times we'd be practiced.
You give me 30 tries at anything, man, I'm going to turn out to be okay at that.
That's cool. So this is Carl. And Ryan, you look like you're in a basement or something.
No, I'm in a conference room at a client's location. I am here doing solution provider sales training boot camp. So we are surrounded by sales reps this week, and I am putting people through the paces to learn how to sell in the modern technology world. That's why the suit and tie.
Very cool. So I'm in Sacramento today, but I came home from Montreal on Monday. It was 60 when I left. It was 80 when I landed. It's been 80, 85 all week. I'm going to Australia on Saturday, so I'll see Dave there.
Yes, you will meet me there. My heart, though, will be here in Washington as my Nationals go to the World Series. I will be taking a jersey down under for those games. But yeah, I've been up late a bunch of nights and was at the game on Monday night here in D.C.
I do like the calculation that it actually becomes morning the next day and you can watch a game live there. So that's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. And I've been searching for bars that will show the game live down under, which should be good fun too.
Many times around the world, you know, you're trying to watch the Super Bowl from Athens, Greece. You're trying to watch Monday Night Football in London. Those time zones usually don't work out because I like football, but I ain't watching it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I have to do a recording at 3 o'clock in the morning one of the days that I'm there. So,
hey, it's you do what you do, man. Work is everywhere and anywhere simultaneously. Modern technology.
Very cool. So let's introduce ourselves, Dave. Who are you?
I'm Dave Sobel. I am with MSPRadio.com. And my new project, I'm happy to announce, is the podcast, The Business of Tech, a daily newscast to catch you up on what you need to know for that day.
Very cool. I'm Carl Polachuk with Small Biz Thoughts. And you can find out about my community at smallbizthoughts.org.
Excellent. And I am Ryan Morris with Morris Management Partners. We are analysts, researchers, and trainers in the technology channel. This week, I am training solution providers on sales. Next week, I am training vendor channel managers on go-to-market strategy in Bangkok, Thailand. So we do a lot of different things, but please connect with me on LinkedIn. I am Ryan Morris on LinkedIn. And if you're wondering who I am, I'm not the one that's based on the East Coast. I'm the one that's based on the West Coast.
Just so we can find you.
Exactly.
So, Carl, you have the coolest topic to start us off this morning. This is going to be too much fun.
I think so, too. And I don't want to actually, go activate the cat because, as you mentioned, it's really loud. But it will probably talk at some point during this. So I bought myself a robotic cat. And not because I'm a weirdo, but because I want to find out more about this whole comfort animal industry. They have comfort robots. The most famous one is actually a seal named Poro. And, you know, it's literally a cute little baby seal. If you're in Canada, you can, you know, take them out clubbing. That's a joke. So my cat is intended for a companion animal for people who don't want to clean the litter box. And I
can relate. I have two cats. And I do not always want to clean the litter box.
And, you know, I had two cats who I had for 15 years, and it was all cool, and I love them and all that happy stuff. But when they passed away, I literally made the decision, I can't get another cat until I figure out what I'm going to do about travel, because my daughter no longer lives with me. You know, having somebody come over, take care of the cats, you know, it's kind of a pain in the neck. And so I thought, well, you know, let me find out what these things are like. And, you know, it's one of these things where it's helpful. The industry is intended to help people who are bedridden or just lonely, that kind of thing. But also, there are some real medical benefits to people who have Alzheimer's or other issues. This improves their overall happiness. You know, imagine being in a hospital where everybody you talk to, all they want to talk about is how sick they are, right? And so sometimes you don't want to talk to those people. So even though you're in the same room, you'd much rather talk to your robotic cat.
Right? Well, I mean, there's real research around, you know, how pets help with happiness. I mean, like, there's literally studies that show petting a cat will make you happier. Like, there's legitimate research to that. So I'm also with you. I'm like super intrigued by this idea of, hey, can we, you know, I don't want to call automate it, but can we also help in those situations where a live animal is not necessarily appropriate? This is really kind of cool. I mean, and interesting, and it made me think a lot about the whole automation as a larger question anyway.
Yeah, well, see, it goes to that question for me, right? It is interesting in its individual application. It's something that serves a unique purpose for a single individual. However, it speaks to the coming of the machines, right? And not to sound ominous about it, it absolutely is a proof point around robotics, around automation, around a very light level of artificial intelligence, right? We're not expecting it to be as good as the real thing yet, but this is how innovation takes root in these kinds of really dramatic levels of progress. You don't start with, you know, hey, here's the full manifestation of artificial intelligence in a humanoid robot. You begin with something that's fun, that's entertaining, that's one limited application, and you iterate on it in an agile way. This is the start, and you can absolutely bet this is the direction that things are going. I think the business implications of this can be fascinating. I think that the travel implications are always going to be a consideration. That's why I don't even have live plants at my house, right? I travel so much, ain't nothing gonna survive when I'm gone. But it is, I tell you, this, it fits a niche right now, and you know, if it serves one purpose, people will find a way for it to serve.
But there's also some related information we know that about minimal viable product. And in the world of virtual reality, you know, they actually research like how much of your hands and feet have to be visible so that you feel that you're actually in that environment, right? They research how far up, you know, your wrist, you know, you have to be able to see and so forth. In this sense, how real does a pet have to be for you to get the benefits of companionship, or, you know, having someone to talk to or whatever? And so, you know, I guarantee that the people who are spending millions of dollars building these robots are doing that research. And so they will get better. And, you know, as it becomes more commonly adopted, I think it'll get better faster.
Well, in this, we're humans are also prone to anthropomorphize machines. I mean, it's obvious from the elements of we give cars often female attributes and names. We're very comfortable talking to voice UIs. We'll talk a little bit more about voice in a moment. But we're inclined as humans to assign these attributes to the technology, exploiting that. And I mean that in the positive way of exploiting, to benefit is not a bad thing. And it actually makes the technology more capable, and it gives it more, you know, of those deliverables that we're looking for. I'm really intrigued by this. It's an interesting idea. But I would also say for me that the takeaway here is how can you make technology more human for your customers, for the way that people interact with it? And does that add additional value?
Yeah, I think it does. And in fact, right, so I have a nephew who is an up-and-coming software developer, right? He is of a generation that thinks big thoughts and doesn't understand, why not me, right? Like, let's go out here and make these things happen. And the development work in customer service applications for call center environments that are designed to leverage machine learning and inference engines around artificial intelligence to kind of predict what people are going to be calling about and then route them to the correct agent, that is absolutely happening right now. And I can see a humanizing of technology being something that helps us get outside the IT department for sales opportunities, right? Techies talk to machines. Non-techies, they know that this technology is coming, but they're not comfortable talking to the machines. Hey, that's fine. Let's make them comfortable talking to the intelligence.
You know, it's so funny because when you say they're not comfortable talking to them, but you've all been on calls where you know, you're trying to get through something and they say, oh, say this for this and this for that. And you're like, God, I just want to talk to somebody. I bought this ticket. It literally picks up that you're frustrated and says, well, let me connect you to a human.
Right? Yeah, but there are times, there are times I don't want to deal with a human. And you know, for me, McDonald's, right? I'm a total fast food junkie. And I prefer the touch screens, the big, tall touch screens when you walk into a McDonald's where I put in my order and I can be specific about any changes that I want. And I don't have to talk to a person at the front desk. And I get assigned a number and then I get issued my food by some. I prefer that process. So there are times where removing the human element isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Right. So in by way of transition, let me just say, when I got the cat, I didn't know like how many sensors and what it did and all that, right? So, oh, you scratch its back, you scratch its ear. And then I said something and it went meow. And I'm like, are you listening to me? I didn't know, right? And then I, right. You know, I walk by and it meows or it like moves its paw. And I'm like, can you see me? Because I don't know. And so right. those things will happen. And I could easily see the next thing that this thing needs is it needs to hear me and it needs to learn my voice so that I can train it. Because right now it's no more trainable than a real cat.
Well, depending on your cat. I have two. One isn't totally trainable and the other completely not. So you have a very real cat, Carol.
Exactly. So I have real of one kind of cat. But that voice interface is, once again, Dave's favorite topic and the future.
Well, I totally love voice, and Ryan made my week when he sent out a note about bringing up voice as this particular week's topic. I covered this on the Business of Tech as well. The fact that Domino's Pizza came out is involved in a lawsuit around accessibility on their website. It has been ruled that the Supreme Court will not hear their case, which is good for disability advocates in that means that they are required to make their website accessible. But what's interesting is they are also working on a voice assistant named Dom that you can order via, and they've made voice part of their implementation there. You know, Ryan, you spotted it. What was your take when you were looking at this article?
See, this was the thing, right? It goes from the idea that we might have voice interface and the possibility to the flat out requirement. And that's exactly how fast these kinds of technologies are going to be approaching us. And why we're so eager to make sure that you guys listening in are aware of these trends and paying attention, not just to the products that are already packaged and available as a SKU through one of your vendors, but the world's moving really fast on some of these things, right? Voice is not new. We've been talking about it ourselves for a long time. It's been in development by various vendors in the industry for 25 plus years. It took forever to get to this point, and it is about to happen all at once. When the Supreme Court affirms that a retail website must have accessibility, specifically in the form of voice access as a user interface, how many of us have websites that are voice active?
Well, that's where my first reaction was a bit of panic because I have about 200 websites, yeah. Right?
Well, and they need to be accessible. That's the rule. Now, voice is not necessarily specifically the only way to do that. They still have to be accessible.
And that's true. So currently, there are programs. I mean, you can buy templates that are, they're reactive, right? So they work well on a phone or a tablet or whatever. And this is literally something where there will be templates that say, and now, it's accessible. There are accessible templates. To my knowledge, none of them do voice. But I also, and this is true for many of our listeners, we deal with websites that are housed on really big companies, right? That they run hosting systems and they provide all of the back end. And so there is nothing I could do for my primary bookstore, for example, to make it voice accessible. But the people who are hosting it, they have hundreds of millions of dollars worth of websites on their system, and they have to. And the only question is, can it get done before I get sued?
Well, it's funny because I have actual development experience in the past couple of weeks on this. So I built an Amazon Alexa skill. So you can, I took the time, you can get the Business of Tech, you can get it as a podcast there. I want to talk about the development process was not that hard. It really was not that difficult to walk through, you know, to build the skill, to put it together, to pull the feed data in, to make it interactive, interactions, to build the responses. They've put the tools together. It was very drag and drop. It was more an element of my time and investment to learn it and build it versus difficulty in putting it together.
Can you give us a link that we can put as like a starter, the first link people need to go to?
Well, if you're going for an Amazon skill, it's right on developer.amazon.com is what I believe it is off the top of my head. But there, I mean, they make it, if you Google search on developer console, Amazon Alexa, it comes right up and they've got all the resources available for building your own skills. Was pretty straightforward to put that together. See,
and again, we think this sounds like, oh, that's kind of an interesting hobby and it's a nice additive thing, except that it happens to come right at the same time. You know, again, we're not breaking news here, but you observe what the implications of the most recent iOS update in the Apple universe was. Yes, it has advancements in the maps area. Yes, it has advancements in other features and functions. Oh, by the way, down the list of ways, there's inside the accessibility and the features around voice access. I read a very interesting article that was talking about that Apple has made like legitimate progress in making your iOS product voice controllable. Now, at present, exactly as the Supreme Court decision points it, it's focused on the question of accessibility in a disabled user type of a conversation. It's not going to live in the accessibility neighborhood for very long at all, because as soon as Domino's Pizza and Apple are investing themselves in this kind of interaction, you'll wake up a day and it will be an expected component of the way that users are able to access information. Are you able to do that for your customers, for your websites? It's a good thing it's easy, because this stuff's going to come on.
The accessibility tools have been around for a long time. So they're, you know, if you have a disability, you probably have access to a browser specifically for this. I know for at least 10, maybe 12 years, all of our websites, we've had to develop them with tags so that they could easily be read by these machines and so forth. I think part of what this voice thing does is it starts with, you have to be able to access the menu, right? Read me the menu, right? And then I will tell you what my option is, and then you can read me the page.
This is also just a circumstance where it's a very obvious business case. You know, there are laws that require you to be accessible. Thus, this is a solution to that. You can extend this by just applying the business case filter to this and say, okay, I bet there are other cases where voice as a UI matters. I've said it before, I will say it again. I do not believe voice as a UI will replace anything. I think it is an augment. Touch didn't replace anything. It made things better. Mice didn't replace keyboards. This is just making those interactions better. Voice is just one more.
And it will, to our previous point, it will make those computers seem awful lot more like humans, right? It is not just pointing and clicking. When I can speak and have an intelligent-ish conversation with my technology, that makes it feel more personable, and it will accelerate the adoption of those AI engines. It's not something that, again, it's not rocket science that's going to happen 10 to 15 years down the road. These are things that the technology professionals need to be paying attention to this year.
And just because somebody's required to do it at one stage doesn't mean that it isn't just turn out to be very, very convenient, right? Well, and true. So people say, well, if that's all I have to do to get a pizza, like, hey, you know, Alexa, order me a pizza from Domino's, or bring up the Domino's menu, or, you know, a lot of us, when we travel, we say, where do you want to eat? There's a Mediterranean restaurant. Oh, what does their menu look like? And we instantly bring it up. Like, three people have it on their phones, right? So if you could also have reviews and so forth that are read, right? There's lots of things you could do with it that just improve life.
Plus, I wonder how many pizzas just got ordered in people's houses because of Carl saying it.
Well, at least we're not playing Jeopardy.
That's true. No playing Jeopardy. Well, speaking then of noise, as the Jeopardy skill is done to do, this one, it was an interesting long read from the Atlantic. And Ryan, you sent this one around to us, and I would encourage everyone to take the time and read this article because it talks about the impact of noise and how technology is affecting the environment. Ryan, I'm going to point to you again. Like, you found this particular article. What struck you first here?
Well, so it struck me because it is the byproduct of a modernizing world, right? The if you read the article again, highly recommend that you take a few minutes and actually dig into this thing. We've got the link in the show notes. The story is of just an ever increasing, first it's quiet, then it gets bigger, and then it's more and more noise that comes from a data center that is a cloud hosting environment where it's not just the hum of the servers, it's actually the cooling equipment because servers get very, very hot. So you build a million servers into a single facility, you need a very large air conditioner, and that thing causes a hum and a whine that it permeates the environment around it. And the point that it hammered me on this conversation was that noise is the exhaust of the digital economy, right? Where we have an industrial economy of combustion engines, we exhaust CO2, and that causes pollution. It causes issues that all of us have to be paying attention to. And when you go electric and when you go digital, you think, yes, I'm not burning anything anymore. There's no negative side effects or byproducts, except that noise is a byproduct. And you might think, well, it's just a hum, whatever. It's not that big of a deal. Except that's where this article goes into it. There's science and substance around the conversation of, hey, noise affects you. Noise is something that will raise your blood pressure. It will increase your stress levels. And it has physiological implications. As people who sell technology for a living, we have this kind of cavalier approach to put it in the cloud, no big deal, right? Once it goes into the cloud, it's gone. Yeah, except it's not gone. The cloud isn't gone. The cloud is just running on a computer somewhere else. And somebody lives next door to that data center. Thank you. We should probably all be paying attention to that stuff. The conversation was fascinating. So I just really wanted to get it out here to start kind of thinking about what are the byproducts of the technology economy and how do we make sure we plan ahead to control these consequences.
Well, and Dave and I both mentioned in private conversation that we monitor the noise of our environment, right? Like I have this dB meter on my phone and he's got one on his watch. And it's like,
yeah, Apple just added it. If you haven't added it. So like, and it's started to surprise me how noisy certain places are. I was in a restaurant bar catching up with some friends, and you know, my watch starts vibrating because it's in a noisy environment. I kind of knew it was noisy, but I didn't realize how noisy it was.
Do you know what the threshold is? Is it like 80 decibels or something?
Yeah, it's there's an 80 decibel threshold, then there's a 100 decibel threshold, and I think it was both in the bar and in the playoff game had broken the 100. So I was actually pulling it up to look at it. It's it lists as loud at 80. And then 85, and then 90, and 95. It actually does every five beyond that.
Oh my gosh. So I'm shocked at how many bars I go into where it's 80 or 85. And it's like, you know, and we've all been there. You can't hold a conversation across a table. And you're yelling and screaming. And, you know, it's a bizarre thing. But it's not just in that environment. If you go into a bathroom and they have those hand dryers, I don't know why those things are set. Those literally are over 100 decibels, right? Well, and it's dangerous.
I'll geek out for a quick moment on the why of particularly restaurants and bars. So that is now an architectural decision because the new spaces, these big open spaces that are more industrial, that have less fabric, that movement in hospitality has caused noisier environments. Right.
On purpose. And
on purpose.
There's a guy who does restaurant reviews in New York who puts in the decimal readings into the restaurant reviews. And the restaurants hate it because they're like, look, people feel like they're having more fun when there's more noise. I'm like, not me, but.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? There are scenarios in which we intentionally want to be in noisy environments. A playoff game is a good example. I love going to concerts, right? I'm extending my punk rock lifestyle, and I intentionally go where it is shockingly loud, but not 24/7. And I think that's one of the implications that we're starting to find is it's not just when you choose to, it's not just in certain scenarios. We are now living in a noisy world, and that noisy world means you're never actually going to fully relax.
Well, there might be opportunity here in the Internet of Things environment to literally have noise sensors, and I could even see some rules and regulations around maximums, right? There should be a low hum even at night, right? Because you got your refrigerator, you got your air conditioner, your heater, right? Your electronic, you know, your robot cat. You got all kinds of things that go on in your house. But also in the office. The office has always got the hum of printers and office equipment and so forth. And, you know, we should be monitoring that and paying some attention to the effect it has on people, especially when people don't get breaks or they're required to put in 12-hour shifts. You know, this whole thing about robots taking our jobs, why are more people working 12 hours a day when the robots should be taking their jobs, right?
Well, and then there is
an environment that makes them nervous because of the noise.
Yeah, and it's funny because there's a lot of things that happen that you don't necessarily think to. I'll think personally for a moment. So, you know, I have the whole home automation stuff. I've invested heavily in that. We have power supplies everywhere because there's a gazillion devices I want to keep running. When the power goes out here, it gets really loud. A symphony of UPS's singing.
Exactly.
And so you have these, but at some level you have unintended consequences of the technology choices. And I think that was the other thing that I was taken away from the article was how much of that was not necessarily intended or not tracked. Right. In particular, the example of the data center, you know, there's a homeowner who was hearing it and was trying to figure out what it was. Not everyone hears exactly the same, so he was impacted differently than his neighbors. But then as it started spreading and talking about it more and more, he finally did connect to other neighbors that found it. But then from the company's perspective, they hadn't thought that through. And I read it as very much it wasn't intentional. It wasn't malicious.
Right.
It was simply we didn't think of that. And we hadn't even thought of that. And you have the downside, of course, is if you're in a work environment, you're only there during the working hours, not necessarily hearing it during the off hours when people might be, you know, at home or nearby. These are those unintended consequences that are difficult to track down. But also, I would be remiss if I didn't highlight, and here's the opportunity, everybody, is starting to think about these other scenarios and understanding that in your business. You know, I'm not saying everyone here is going to go become a sound engineer and go consult around that, but having an eye out to were there unintended consequences is a key.
Well, point. And there's also two things. One is you mentioned last week when we were talking about the drones buzzing around the campus, how much total noise do they make? So the first thing is you got to be aware of that. The second thing is we have noise canceling technology, and that might be something where people can come in and say, look, yes, it costs money, but if you want to minimize the effect of this noise, we can sell you this technology, right? We can, within our purview.
See, and I would go exactly that far in a very tactical sense, right? I think this is something a solution provider should add to their portfolio. I think that we sell a lot of machines that make a lot of noise, and that has an impact on our customers' working environment. Let's make sure that we proactively go back in and think about that, mediate that, and make sure that there's an alternative. Not everybody's going to adopt, obviously. Not everybody will buy the noise-canceling technologies. But whether it's buffers or insulation, whether it's electronic noise suppression, there are ways that you can deal with this. And you will have customers who feel it, and their employees are on edge and they are wondering what it is. And when you can use technology to improve the working environment for the humans, I think people are about to pay for that. I think it's not a fantasy item. That's a fundamental solution we can add to the portfolio.
Well, Carl, you mentioned it, like putting sensors in place. Here's designing a business on the fly. You know, if you're doing any kind of remote monitoring and management of things, you can easily put in sensors and track on this. And yeah,
in fact,
if your industry requires it, start tracking noise levels.
Well, see, in fact, I would just point to that. You know, if you own, or if you even stay in an Airbnb, right? Many of these places that you can go stay in somebody else's place, they will install actually a noise sensor to alert them remotely if you start throwing a raging party in their house and they've told you not to do that. That is absolutely already on the market, and it is something that you can install in your customer's environment right away, above and beyond, right? Like, let's just go make this stuff happen.
Quick final story. Many years ago, I had a client that when they hired me, the owner of the company, probably 20-person company, had the old server in his office. And then we sold him a new server, which was an ML350 from HP. And I said, you're not going to want this in your office. And he said, oh, it'll be fine. I had the other one in here for years. And I'm like, okay. So I pushed the power button. And you know how it starts by doing the fan test. So it's like, whoa. And he literally like stood up from his desk and said, okay, let's find a place for that. And we walked around the office.
As the jet engines take off, for, prepare for liftoff on a
350. All righty. Well, sadly, we're out of time, but I do have to say, after 30 episodes, gentlemen, I am loving this podcast.
This is some of the most fun riffing I do every week.
And, absolutely. I put them all together and then I post them up and then I actually end up listening to it. And I think it's enjoyable. Like, I would listen to this podcast and I would tell all my friends and I would give it a thumbs up on social media and share it with everybody I know.
Well, we hope our listeners feel the same way. Please continue to give us feedback, share it, like us, tell your friends. If we are truly killing it in the industry out there.
Killing it. All righty. Thank you all. We will see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.